Moms, are you raising your kids to believe they can create the life of their dreams? Are you living your life that way as well? Living an awakened life means more than just talking about it. Join host Debbie Pokornik on Vibrant Powerful Moms as she shares practical tips, stories, and interviews with enlightened guests, all geared at helping you create and live an extraordinary life. It's time to stand firmly in your power and model the life you want for your kids to inherit. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show. I'm your host, Debbie Pokornik, and my mission is to help you create a life that fully aligns with who you have come here to be and that you can totally fall in love with. My guest today is Kate McGinnis, a woman who went from life as a high-flying Los Angeles lawyer to existing as an exile in an Iowa farm town. This job, Kate said, had become her identity, so losing it felt like losing a piece of herself. And as if that wasn't enough, the losses just kept on coming. When Kate and I connected a few weeks back, I was struck first by her incredible story and then by how relevant and helpful talking about loss could be for all of us right now. Loss is never an easy thing to deal with, whether it be loss of a job, loss of your home, loss of a relationship, loss of investments or finances, and of course, loss of someone you love. So Kate is here today to talk with us about how she dealt with the many losses that life was throwing at her and successfully put her life back together. Kate now helps women enliven their best selves at Empowered Women Coaching. And just this last January, 2020, she released her book, Confidence Lost, Confidence Found, How to Reclaim the Unstoppable You. So without further ado, Kate, welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to talk to you this morning.
It's awesome to have you here. And you know, people don't even really know this yet, but you are officially my last interview on the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show. So that's a special place. Special place
well,
to be. So you
I'm glad I made the cut.
Oh, gosh. Well, no problem. In fact, I thought, well, I've got to shift things around because this is a story that needs to be told. So you have a pretty incredible story of loss, and that resulted in you losing your self-confidence, your livelihood, and even your identity. So how about we start by having you create a quick sketch of your life at the time of your job loss for our listeners? So were you married? Did you have kids? Did you work a lot? Just a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, it was a very different life than I'm living now. So I was married. I lived in a lovely house. I had a son who was in elementary school, third grade. I was working a whole lot. I was the general counsel for a big public company, a company that had billions of assets and tens of thousands of employees. And it was very demanding. It was also very exciting. It was a company that had a pretty big profile in the community. So that was my life when things ground to a halt.
Oh my gosh. And so can you tell us a bit about what happened, how they grounded to a halt?
Sure. I had been, I thought, doing quite well. I had gotten a very large bonus about 4 months before. Two people walked into my office one sunny morning and said, we're putting out a press release before the market opens on Wednesday to tell them you're no longer going to be our general counsel. And wow. They were going to lock me out of my office at the end of the day. So that was very startling because I had spent over 20 years being a lawyer, working so hard to build up my reputation, my status in the community, and suddenly, kabam, it was gone.
Wow. Talk about the rug just being pulled right out from under your feet, right? The floor, actually the whole building, just suddenly gone. Oh my gosh. All right. So I have to ask, exiled in Iowa, what's that about?
Oh, so I lost my job. And after months of negotiation, I got a very good severance package. And my lawyer thought, oh, well, you know, for tax reasons, we're going to take it in annual installments rather than one big lump sum. Mm-hmm. So, okay, he was a smart tax lawyer. I agreed. And things ticked along just fine for several years. My son by then was in high school. He was going to a boarding school in California wine country, beautiful place. I ended up buying a ranch there, and I wrote a novel during my time when I wasn't working, and things seemed to be just idyllic. Other, you know, my ego still kind of was raw, or it was healing, but not quite 100% recovered.
Still pretty bruised, I'd imagine.
Bruised. Yeah, it really was. But I kind of saw the severance as, well, okay, this is a salve or a bomb. I kind of thought of it as reparations.
Right.
And then the company paying the severance in annual installments went bankrupt.
Oh, my gosh.
So it was a double hit. Lost my job, lost my money, had to sell my ranch, and couldn't. I had an old horse that I loved. But he couldn't, it was a long trip to Iowa. And I ended up going to Iowa because by the time all of these events unwound, I was then married to my meditation teacher. And he taught transcendental meditation. And the Center for Transcendental Meditation in the U.S. is a small town in Iowa. So his idea was, having suffered this big financial loss, because the company was in bankruptcy, who knows how much I would get out of it, very uncertain. And so he said, oh, let's go to Iowa. I have friends. Cost of living is less. And so I went along with that.
Right.
And the town that we went to, 9,000 people. And half of them were very devoted practitioners of transcendental meditation who literally spent 7 hours a day meditating together.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But the other half of the town was pig and soybean farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So here I was. I wasn't in either camp.
Hmm. A high-flying lawyer, right? Used to the life and all that comes from that life. And now suddenly there you are out in the midst of pigs and meditators.
Yeah, that's right. It was, I really didn't fit anywhere.
Oh my gosh. And so what happened next?
Well, I spent 3.5 years in the cornfield, so to speak, waiting for the bankruptcy to get resolved, and trying to sort out, well, what do I do with my life now? How do I support myself now? Because my savings were, of course, dwindling, waiting for the bankruptcy to resolve.
Right.
And I actually had enjoyed my life as a lawyer and really spent a lot of time thinking about what it was like to be a woman lawyer, because that's different. And I was following a lot of blogs and press about women lawyers. And there are a whole lot of unhappy women lawyers, and there still are. But it occurred to me, well, maybe one answer was to train to be a coach, an executive coach, and then work with women lawyers to see if we couldn't together come up with plans to make them a little happier, a little less unsatisfied. So I enrolled in a 7-month training program to be an executive coach, and that became my ticket out of Iowa.
Okay. And what about your husband?
Well, my husband, the man who was my then husband, a very kind, loving man, was very devoted to his meditation. And I have to tell you, being married to someone who meditates 7 hours a day, isn't how I saw my life going. You know, there's not a lot of time or focus or presence left when they come out of meditation. So I wanted a divorce, and he was sad, but he didn't object. And he stayed in Iowa. He's there. He's happy. He has a friend, a companion, who was also very devoted to transcendental meditation. So it's funny, as his sister said, I'm still close to my former sister-in-law, that she thought maybe sometime the idea of moving to Iowa was just a scheme to get him back to the world where he belonged.
Absolutely. You know, as you were sharing that, it made me think of, I used to work at a woman's shelter many years ago. And I remember one of my clients saying to me that her husband was so heavenly focused, he was no earthly good.
Oh, that's a wonderful phrase.
It really is. I'm not sure that it's exactly, you know, we could apply it here exactly, but the idea is there that a relationship takes time and energy right here on this plane.
Yes.
You know, that's where we're functioning. So now there you are. You've lost this job that was so much a part of who you are. Now your son is now where? He was in school this time?
He by then, he was in college, and I have to confess, he was in college in Iowa. So that, you know, kind of added to the appeal of, well, let's go to this town where housing is cheap and people are enlightened.
Oh my gosh. But that is, I mean, that's a huge amount of loss. And even it sounds like your divorce, you know, it wasn't like I can't stand being around you. It was, or at least it sounds as if it was more of a, you know what, I need more.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good way to put it.
Oh my gosh. So there you've lost all that money. You've lost your income. You've lost your beautiful home. You've lost all of this stuff. And yet it sounds to me like you were still figuring out ways to pick yourself up.
That's right. I never actually gave up. It was always, well, what's next? What can I do that's productive? What can I do to help people? By the time I got to Iowa, my book, the novel, had just been published. And it was a novel written for women to help them understand and recognize sexual harassment and gender discrimination. And
nice.
Yeah, I mean, that was my idea. And I folded that into what I hope was a compelling legal thriller. And there were reviewers that called it that. So trying to help women through that forum. And so what I did for when I got to Iowa, I did a lot of tweeting. You know, I was, I guess, an early adapter of Twitter and sending out tweets about women's power, sending out quotes from people like Gloria Steinem. So I kept that focus pushing. And nice.
What year would this be, approximately?
That would be 2012.
Okay. Oh, right at the shift.
Yes.
Time of the big shift.
That's right.
Nice. Okay. So let's shift gears here a little bit. I want to give you a chance to talk a bit about the pieces that you've really studied and really come to understand and that have ended up in your book. So how do you define confidence?
Oh, I define confidence is the belief that what you attempt to do, you will generally be able to accomplish. Not always, but generally.
Okay. And then I know you talk about courage as an element of confidence. So how does that come in?
That's a very good point, Debbie. So if confidence is about doing, you have to get the courage, the willingness to do it. So sometimes look at something simple. Remembering I come from LA, so I think of things in terms of freeway. So you're thinking of an event you want to go to at night, and it's dark and it's raining, but oh, you really want to do it. And you're thinking, you know, am I going to go out and get on this 8-lane freeway to, mm-hmm. you know, go see my son's teacher, go to this concert? So you have to have the courage to say, okay, I'm going to walk out the door. I'm going to put the key in the lock. And so that's confidence when you do it. Courage is really the precursor to confidence.
Mm. So courage is what gives you the ability to actually take action. That's
very
what you're
nice.
Saying.
Yes.
Nice. I can really relate to your example. I mean, I just moved down to Atlanta, Georgia in 2018. And it took me over a year to really get out on the freeways that were bigger than 3 lanes because it's scary. So let's take this now and maybe we can turn it and apply it to what people are facing right now. Right? Because we're in the midst of this pandemic and, you know, so many people, some have lost their job. Some of them have, are seeing their savings go drop. I mean, maybe they haven't lost it yet, but the markets have certainly been very, very volatile, and that's creating a lot of fear for people. And, you know, there's just so much there. Their identity could be being lost. Their job could be being lost. Where they're living could be being lost. Currently, they're probably not getting kicked out of where they're living, but still, you know, there's all of that stuff coming up. What can people do to feel more courageous given all the scary stuff that's going on?
Well, I think a good starting point is to practice self-compassion, which means being compassionate for your suffering, what you're going through. Self-compassion really has 3 steps. And the first is recognizing that you are suffering. You're in a moment of suffering. But the key here is not to say, oh my gosh, it's awful. It's awful, awful. Be willing to say, well, yeah, it is awful. But basically, you know, my car is not on the brink of the cliff. Yep, it's scary. Maybe the car is near the edge, but it's not over it. Because if you get so overwhelmed by the sense of suffering, then it really shuts off all other avenues of self-care and compassion. So you say, okay, this is a moment of suffering. I am suffering. The next step is to say, other people are suffering too. Now, they may not be suffering the same thing. It may be, I'm suffering because I'm worried about my investments. Other people may be worried about their investments. They may be worried about their housing. They may be worried about sick relatives right now. And why you want to get to the second step of saying other people are suffering is goes back to evolutionary psychology and being members of a tribe. So once you've said to yourself, oh, this is a moment of suffering, this is hard, then if you can say other people are suffering too, that's a way of telling yourself, like inoculating yourself against the possibility that you're going to be exiled from the tribe. You're going to be dropped. Okay, I'm suffering, but so are others. And that knowing that you're part of others, a group of others that are suffering, not necessarily the same thing, helps you not feel isolated. Because being isolated is very dangerous psychologically.
Absolutely. So, feeling alone feeling separate from everyone is one of our biggest challenges, probably the biggest.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. I love how you slipped inoculation in there.
Yeah.
It's just very relevant.
It is.
Yeah.
And then you get to the third step. So I'm suffering, others are suffering. And the third step, here's the good one, is to be kind to yourself. Mm. And that could be wrapping your arms around your shoulders and giving yourself a hug. And if you're in the office, you can make that look like it's a stretch.
Absolutely.
You can put your hand on your cheek. You can say, oh, I'm sorry, this really is, kid, you're going through a hard time. Think of what you would say to a dear friend or a child to be kind to them at a moment of suffering.
Mm-hmm. That is beautiful. So what I got from what you just shared is basically surrendering to what is, right? At the beginning, yes. Recognizing this is what's going on. Right?
Yes, you don't blow it out of proportion and you don't minimize it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then kind of shifting your perspective.
Yes.
And I love how you connected that into the tribe and being a part of something, like recognizing that this isn't just happening to me. And I mean, we're in a very unique time where this is happening around the world, whereas your story, you could have easily felt like a person who, you know, I'm the only one this is happening to. Right?
That's right. That's right.
And yet you didn't. Very interesting. So you just knew that I have to keep myself connected to others. And it's interesting that you also now were in a place where you felt isolated.
Well, it's interesting, Debbie. One of the ways that I became connected to others there was I learned to knit because that was very popular in that community. And I have to admit, I am not very good at it at all. But getting together and sitting with other women, and some of them were fantastic. Some of them helped me. But it was a way of connection and it helped me get through that time.
Oh, I love that. Because what you're saying is that it wasn't that you were already a skilled knitter. In fact, it sounds like you might never have really become a skilled knitter.
That's right.
Yeah. Which is my story as well with knitting. But you found something that allowed you to connect with other people. And that is just so important for your heart.
Oh, it was. I mean, I had a big house there because housing prices are so low compared to California. So I was able to get a house with a big living room. And on Friday afternoons, the ladies would come over, we would knit, and we would drink Prosecco.
Oh, nice.
And maybe very that's why my knitting wasn't so good, but it was a fun time.
Exactly. That's okay. It's fun pulling the stitching out too. With knitting, it's not like sewing where the knitting can be, you know, hard to get out, or knitting the stitches can be hard to get out. With knitting, you just pull it off the needles and it undoes.
Yeah.
love it. Okay, so you have surrender, you have perspective, you have kindness to yourself. Such an important message. I hope people are hearing this, because these are so relevant always, but especially to right now. So let's talk about the whole boundary thing. Like, some people struggle with saying no. All right. And I think because of that, we can put ourselves in risky situations. We can make it hard for us to get things done, you know, where we're doing too much. What do you suggest they do to make it easier for them to enforce a boundary like that?
Well, I think it becomes easier if you can actually keep in mind the feelings of the person that you're saying no to. So in other words, you know, they're going to be disappointed. And how can you say no in a way that softens the no? So sometimes you can say no with appreciation. Mm-hmm. So you might say, oh, I think your idea is fabulous, but I'm not able to participate at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes you can say no with offers of help. Oh, I love it that you thought of me, but I'm not able to participate. How can I help you find someone else? And you can also say no with invoking your values. And sometimes that may be how the end line of how high or how forceful emotionally you might make your no. So if you say your values, I mean, suppose somebody asks you to march or volunteer or give money to a cause, and you might say, I wouldn't be honoring my commitment to my values. Or maybe it's, I can't take on another task right now because I won't be honoring my commitment to my family. So nice. That's a way to make the other person hear that your no is more than simply a refusal. It's a no that's backed by values and by your understanding of what it means to them.
Nice. And so it's allowing them to be respectful of that other person. Like, you know, I so appreciate your asking me. And exactly. Right now just isn't a good time.
Yes.
Love it. So I want to let people know how they can find out more about you. And then if we have time, we'll come back to maybe one more question. So you can find out more about Kate at her website, katemcginnis.com. If you're not sure how to spell McGinnis, just look at the booze. and also you can go to the vibrantpowerfulmoms.com website, where the blog for today's show will have a link directly to Kate's site. Now, once you're on her site, you will find a sign up for 10 tips for authentic confidence, which will get you on Kate's list and will allow you to hear about any other special offers that she might have. So, Kate, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing your story with us. I really feel like right now is a great time for us to remember that losses are happening to people all the time. And while that doesn't make it fun or easy or even okay, it does make it a part of life for all of us. So when we can accept that and recognize that we really can handle whatever life throws our way, we can shift out of suffering and regain our connection to our confidence and resiliency and so on. And that makes all the difference in the world, because while there's always going to be struggle in our life, we do not have to be suffering. So thank you, Kate, for helping us to shine a light on that. I think it's just such an important topic.
Oh, thank you. I really enjoyed being here with you today.
Awesome. Now we probably have enough time for you to share one last little nugget if you'd like to leave our listeners with one.
One thing I would say is that the first person who writes to me, Kate at katemcginnis.com, and tells me that they listen to this show, I'll be glad to send them a paperback copy of my book.
Oh, that's very nice of you. Now, sometimes people aren't listening to this show till later because it is a podcast, which is very nice. So don't be discouraged. If that happens and you're thinking, oh, darn, I'm too late. First of all, go ahead, send a message just in case. And if not, at least get to her website and see what you can find there, because you can get the 10 tips for authentic confidence and a lot of other good information. So thank you once again, Kate, and a big thank you to you, my listeners. I love you and I appreciate you always. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik and her guest, Kate McGinnis, wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you've enjoyed this show, please share it with others to help spread the love. To find out more about Debbie, pick up free offers from the show, and listen to previous episodes, visit vibrantpowerfulmoms.com.